Blog Talk Radio.
Oh.
on this next article, this is from the AFL-CIO blog, but for some reason it's slower than snails here. I'm trying to get it to budge. There you go. This one was, I thought was interesting. Idelson, McDonald's guest workers stage surprise strike. McDonald's workers in central Pennsylvania launched a strike at 11 this morning, reports Josh Idelson of The Nation. The guest workers who began the strike, surprise strike, alleged that the franchisee of the world's largest fast food hamburger chain owes them unpaid wages and has retaliated against them. It's kind of like one of the problems that you have with the franchised corporations. Franchisees don't always pay their people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
And so, let's see. I also write that the workers are from Latin America, and Asia, and are working on the United States under the controversial cultural exchange visa program. Advocates like the National Guest Workers Alliance, which is helping to lead the strike, says the J-1 visa program is rife with abuse, and programs that bring in guest workers like J-1 visa, says NGA, offer ample opportunities for employers to intimidate workers, suppress organizing, and drive down labor standards. Allison writes, McDonald's is just the latest in the long line of corporations that have hijacked the U.S. guest worker program to get cheap, exploitable labor, and that's what the students are, NGA Executive Director Asaka Soni told The Nation. The conditions are horrific, but have become the norm for guest workers. The workers are striking over what they charge are rampant abuses at their stores in Harrisburg and nearby Lemoyne and Campbell. According to NGA, the visiting students each paid $3,000 or more for the chance to become and work, and were promised full-time employment. Most received only a handful of hours a week, while others work shifts as long as 24 hours straight without being paid overtime. Their employer is also their landlord, said Sony, and they're earning sub-minimum wages and then paying it back in rent, to share a room with up to 7 workers. Their weekly net pay is actually sometimes brought as low as 0. We are living in a basement, says Rios, cramped together with no divisions and bunk beds, which are meant for children. So, McDonald's, you are not right doing this.
Well, here's another article on a follow-up to the American Legislative Exchange Council that I just read.
Right.
Bush's corporate education group operates from Alex's playbook. The American Legislation Exchange Council's long history of influencing state legislators, as we just talked about, sometimes even writing legislation for them, to pass laws and promote policies that advance a corporate profit agenda, and at times an extreme conservative agenda, is well documented. Now a new report shows another group, led by former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, is following the Alec blueprint in pushing state education policy backed by for-profit education corporations. According to the watchdog group in the public interest, newly obtained emails show the Foundation for Excellence in Education, founded and chaired by Bush and conservative state education officials, wrote and edited laws, regulations, and executive orders, often in ways that improve profit opportunities for the organization's financial backers. Foundation for Excellence in Education sometimes works through its Chiefs for Change affiliate. In the public interest chair, Donald Cohen says, testing companies and for-profit online schools see education as big business. For-profit companies are hiding behind Foundation for Excellence in Education and other business lobby organizations that they fund to write laws and promote policies that enrich the companies. The report shows the dangerous role that corporate money plays in shaping our education policy. Correspondents in Florida, New Mexico, Maine, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, and Louisiana paint a graphic picture of corporate money distorting democracy. So that's pretty interesting. I've always felt that all the testing that we have is only benefiting the people who are selling us the tests.
That's true. That's very true. We gotta go to Larry. Why don't you do this one? Here, I wanted to put this up. UN demands prosecution of Bush era. Here, it's on my Facebook account. I post a lot of my stuff up on Facebook, right? That I want to keep over the course of the week. So, and Lila's gonna read this one. United Nations investigator has demanded that the U.S. publish classified documents regarding the CIA human rights violations under former President George W. Bush, with hopes that the documents will lead to the prosecution of public officials. Documents about the CIA program of rendition and secret detention of suspected terrorists have remained classified, even though President Obama administration has publicly condemned the use of these enhanced interrogation techniques. The U.S. has also prosecuted any of the agents of the year. Can you read that? UN investigator Ben Emerson.
UN investigator Ben Emerson, the UN special reporter on the promotion and protection of human rights while countering terrorism, said the classified documents protect the names of individuals who are responsible for serious human rights violations. Despite this clear repudiation of the unlawful actions carried out by the Bush-era CIA, many of the facts remain classified, and no public official so far has been brought to justice in the United States, Emerson said in a report to the UN Human Rights Council, according to Reuters. Kept in secret prisons around the world, the CIA detainees were subjected to torture, including waterboarding, sleep deprivation, and various other interrogation techniques that violate human rights. The detainees were often subjected to clandestine treatment known as CIA black sites. We'll talk more about this phone right now, calling him.
Hello.
Hi, Larry. It's Lila, and Leo is right here. How are you this evening?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
Hey, Larry.
We're okay. Just wondering if we're going to get more snow dumped on us like everybody else.
Stop worrying about it.
If it happens, it happens, huh?
Remember Dr. Strangelove, how I learned to stop worrying and love the bomb.
Yeah, really. That's about what
it is, right? That was the subtitle of that movie, and, you know.
Really, I didn't remember that, but now that you've said it, I do.
Yeah.
People remember certain things like that. Must have made an impact on you, Larry.
I think we're living, you know, our, I don't know, it's not post, but maybe it's pre-apocalyptic days, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're, you know, sequestration becomes the new word in our vocabulary.
Isn't that sick? Yeah, is it
yeah.
Sick?
We had no trouble giving $1 billion to the Syrian rebels. That had to come out of the American coffers.
Actually, we gave $250 million just the other day to the Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt.
Right.
Then we gave Israel. They want $1 billion. I think we said we could only give them half of that. And then now. We're still giving away billions of dollars. We just committed another, a half of a billion or something, or $1 billion dollars into Syria,
mm-hmm.
And a whole bunch of troops.
And it makes what the sequester, that small amount of money seems so piddling compared to everything else.
Yeah, but it
creates so much pain.
Yeah.
Good point. I mean, the priorities are so misplaced right now.
Aren't they?
They're ridiculous.
It's so upsetting when you read something like that, and you know that people are going to be laid off, and you know that a lot of people who are in dire straits economically are the ones that are going to suffer the most.
So, Larry, maybe you can shed some light on what the hell the Republican game plan is here. Other than to just destroy us, is that what the whole plan is, or what?
What do you think?
I think that's as good an explanation as any, but, I mean, the short answer is they can't get enough for themselves. They're a wholly owned subsidiary of these fabulously wealthy right-wing nuts like the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
You know, they're complete captive to these extreme ideologues. The flip side, though, is that I think I'm not seeing enough guts out of the Democratic Party, and I wish they would take their case more strongly to the American people about the need to close those tax loopholes, the need to have a financial transactions tax on these massive amounts of millions of dollars.
Yeah. These plans are never brought out to us.
You guys have been reading the same stuff I am. Wall Street is doing very well right now.
Yeah,
it's a bull market for the corporations, and it's a bear market for the American worker. So, I'd like to see some stronger, loyal opposition to these kooks in the Republican Party who seem to, despite being not owning Congress, they're controlling the debate.
Oh, they're absolutely controlling the debate. The mainstream media doesn't offer anything else. They just talk about the sequester, and they just kind of drop it.
No, and the hypocrisy, sorry to jump in, I didn't mean the hypocrisy of these corporate guys who are behind, these corporate people who are behind the Fix the Debt campaign. They've sold the American people this bill of goods that you can cut your way out of this crisis, and that's not true.
No, it's absolutely not true. And, what the American people don't, what a lot of people, I won't say the American people in general, don't realize is, first it's the guy down the street, and then it's the guy a block away, and then it's your neighbor, and then it's you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's we're kind of moving right up the chain, don't you think?
I do, and Connecticut is we've prided ourselves on having a stronger labor movement, stronger unions, stronger labor laws, and this stuff's getting too close to home.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, and this state is an expensive state to live in.
Mm-hmm.
And I see kids coming back from college with college degrees, moving home with mom and dad, and either not working or having minimum wage jobs. It's
mm-hmm.
really, really sad.
Well, I refer to this, this group, this Fix the Debt, and people ought to look that up, because this is a bunch of corporate chieftains with some powerful PR push, and they're pushing this, they're advocating this grand bargain to have an austerity budget, and one of the CEOs who sits on this group has acknowledged that I believe he called it an artificial crisis. He said the goal of the group is to create an artificial crisis to compel Congress to act. This is scary stuff. These guys know full well that we need stimulus, we need spending, we need to bring up the wages of America, we need to put more people to work.
I guess Obama invited some Republicans to a hotel or some
for dinner,
and then he left out all the moderates.
Right. That's why it's getting to be a very upsetting.
What I don't understand about him is this happens all the time. He seems to snub people. He seems to like to snub certain people, and always backfires on him whenever he does these events.
He picks certain people and leaves other people out.
Yeah, and people that could actually help him. You know, so I don't understand Obama's diplomacy. I don't understand what he's doing, you know, and why he just doesn't make sense to me anymore. I've tried.
What do you think about the group that he's invited? Do you think that
he's become so entrenched, but at the same time, he's got the authority, he's got the power, he could wipe these guys out, you know, with a single blow. But he
stroke of the pen.
Yeah, you know, he could nullify these Republicans, even, you know, just with a propaganda war. And
my frustration. Yeah, I understand that he doesn't have control of Congress. That
me of the first Romney debate with him. You know,
right.
You just stood there. Yeah,
he got pounded. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really, you know, when he got elected for the second time, you know, he really could have come out swinging.
And he didn't.
Could have and should have. You know, not just.
You know, that was
right?
The opportunity for him to really come out swinging, because people elected him for a second term. They expect something.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, he's trying to appease again. You know,
and that didn't work the first time around, so I don't understand why he's doing it again, because I don't see a good outcome to this, because what they want, there are those conservative Republicans want cuts to, and I refuse to call them entitlement programs, because everybody sneers, to our insurance programs that we paid for. We paid our dues to them, but they want those cuts.
Right.
They see that money
and they want it. They want that money in private in their pockets.
Yep, and you know that's why, again, you know, words are very important. And I'm with you. I can't stand the use of the word entitlement. It suggests that people have their hands out.
Right, like you didn't pay for it. Like they're giving you a handout. It's no handout. We all paid for that in advance.
Yeah, it's also something that has tremendous value to the economy when people can spend money, when they can live with some measure of security.
Dignity.
Yeah. You know, when did that become a bad thing? I'm at a loss.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
I don't either. And I was just reading an article off the AFL-CIO blog, which interested me. It was on Bush's corporate education group operating.
Oh, yeah.
Alex playbook.
Yeah.
That infuriated me, because I see, and as you probably well know.
It's funny, I was reading that too as well today. Yeah, I noticed that.
We're doing all kinds of testing, you know, of kids, and they're tested. I don't know how many ways they have to be tested. And I wonder, you know, whose idea was all this testing? And we're, you know, the companies that are making all these tests and all these education recommendations are making huge amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see a better outcome in the end for kids.
I don't either.
And
I don't either.
And I really don't.
Nope.
So,
nope.
You know, that's another thing that's, you know, the way the wool has been pulled over the American people by these corporations, and these companies have great names. You know, you'd think they were very interested in education just from reading their names. It's
right.
Like everything else. They put a name on something that makes you think that they're interested in excellence, right? The foundation for excellence in education.
Right.
They're not interested in excellence in education. They're
interested
in profit for their corporation.
Right. No, that's exactly. I'm really glad you said that. That's just exactly what they're about, and it's scary stuff. And it's just like, you know, fix the debt. All these groups have these, you know, positive.
You know. I think what probably makes me most sick is that sudden thing toward No Child Left Behind, right?
Yeah.
When that took place, guess what the Bush family was heavily invested in at that point. Textbooks.
Some kind of education.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Neil Bush was peddling that, and Jeb Bush was peddling ethanol. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, now Jeb Bush is into education.
Yeah. And it's funny, I was watching a video today about Bush The UN has agreed to indict him for war crimes.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't. You have to send me that.
Yeah, the UN. And we, yeah, I guess I know too. And then and Bush was standing there trying to defend, you know, what he did in Iraq, you know, and saying that we invested heavily in education.
You know, that's what he said.
Yes, we invested heavily in education.
Can't make it up. You know, these guys just, and that gets back to the question we
did. They sent over six,
you know,
billion.
They can't steal
cash.
Enough.
$6 billion in cash that they sent over and nobody could find traces of anymore.
What's that?
$6 billion they sent over in cash to Iraq.
The government.
That disappeared. I thought it was more, actually. But yeah.
Actually, $6 billion.
Well, that's what they're saying right now. It's probably more.
Yeah. They said it was like 40 tons, something like 40 tons of paper money.
Halliburton and you know, Blackwell, a lot of these companies.
Yeah, they are. Sure. But it was supposed to be for you know, projects. But you know, it's just unbelievable. But it's sad that it's going to take 10 years. You know, it's already taken almost 10 years for them to admit that they were crooks. You know.
Right.
What's going to be done about it?
We'll see.
Nothing. It's just the same thing. You know, Wall Street, have any Wall Street bankers gone to jail or been brought to trial? No.
but maybe Bush is so hated, you know. Maybe they'll go after him.
You know, unfortunately, we tend to shield privilege. We shield the privileged in this country. You know, that's
Bad thing to see. Yeah, it's kind of like the Pope, you know. They can't get him in the Vatican. As soon as he walks out, then they can grab him. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, they have their problems there. But what is the state of Connecticut? How do you think things are going here for the unions in Connecticut?
Well, look, we've got our work cut out for us. I think as we discussed last month, you know, the membership numbers have dropped. We're trying to recapture some of that membership, and you know, we've got a fight on our hands. The you know, this continued defunding of public services obviously affects unions. It affects working people. And we've got to take the fight wherever we can go. You know, one small example is, you know, the governor is proposing to get rid of the property tax on automobiles, which sounds on paper like a good idea, but what it would do is actually negatively impact municipalities across the state, and it will lead to cuts in services. You know, now why is he proposing that? He ought to at least look to equalize the auto.
Yeah, exactly. How
far do you think that's going to go in the state legislature? Oh, I think we lost Larry. Larry?
He's still there.
I don't think he can hear us. Larry?
He's still there. Oops, he's this guy.
Yeah. I think probably what happened, he's probably went out of service.
No, I think he was home. I can try one more time.
Shut it up. Leo will call him back.
Yeah, I'll have to see if he's...
Turn that phone up, too, because I had trouble hearing him.
See if I can get him back.
You sure that was his home or his cell phone that you called?
Home.
Oh. He was kind of going out, fading out. I noticed that. So Leo will try to get Larry back.
Actually, he was only scheduled for 15 minutes there, but I just want to make sure he's... For some reason, I can't dial him either. Our friend Larry. I don't know why. For some reason, we can't seem to.
Are you sure that we
reconnect with him?
You're disconnected.
Yeah. For
here.
For some reason, I can't get the phone to.
Here, try this. Sign into this one.
No, that's okay. No. It's something wrong with the.
No, you couldn't call back on that one last time when you tried to call someone. So please sign into this one and you can call them back.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, Lila, why don't you read something fascinating here to the people?
Let me just finish this one. As I was reading this.
The one on Bush era crimes.
Yep. This, remember I was talking about the United Nations has demanded that the U.S. publish classified documents regarding the CIA's human rights violations under former President George W. Bush. Okay, now we're getting down to U.N. investigator Ben Emmerson, the U.N. special reporter on the promotion and protection of human rights while countering terrorism, said that the classified documents protect the names of individuals who are responsible for serious human rights violations.
Okay.
We're back in. We had some trouble.
It's not showing that we are, but we are. It's showing that we never left. I don't know what the system is right now.
We're talking about the rendition program that Bush had.
We're sorry that our guest Larry got cut off and we can't seem to reconnect.
We can't get back to him.
So we apologize to him for that, and we apologize to our audience. In the meantime, let's get out of here and go to.
I should finish that article.
I thought it was already done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't tell me.
I did.
Well, who the hell cares? The guy's going down. We're hoping that the guy goes down forever and ever. Right?
Well, I don't know whether that's going to happen.
We hope that he does. That's all that we care about.
Well, as Larry said to that, this country has always protected the privileged.
Well, that's true, but I don't care right now. I'd like to see him go down. I want to see George
that
Bush.
That isn't what we were taught.
I want to see George Bush go down. That's what I want to see.
Probably not going to happen.
It will. It will. I have faith. Big plans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big plans for George W. Bush.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, but...
The UN isn't too pleased with him, so that's beginning, I guess.
It's pretty sad. There's so much else I wanted to talk about tonight. I really wanted to talk a little bit about... Hugo Chavez, and we have a couple of clips that I wanted to play. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. All right, because I thought that we would play it. It would be better that you hear it from these people. And I wrote on this, I couldn't believe it.
Well, let's just play
after it. But imagine if you can, anybody crying like this, these people, over the death of G.W. Bush. These are people learning about the death of Hugo Chavez. It's quite sad. It's a little video and a short article. The lady says, "Chavez took a piece of my heart." This is by Yahoo News. Venezuelans mourn the death of Cesar Chavez. Hugo Chavez. Oh, come on.
An advertisement.
They're not even playing that. They do take it down already. Anyway, let me read the article. It says, a flag-draped coffin carrying the body of Venezuelan Hugo.
Oh, here it comes.
I can pretty much get any moment I want. So it's like, whatever.
You have to put up with the advertisement.
There's a dumb jerk advertisement on there. They got to commercialize his stuff.
Shut
Latino supporters of Hugo Chavez mourn his death in a flood of emotion in Caracas.
My heart is broken. Chavez took a piece of my heart.
Allies of the socialist leader hope that grief will help ensure the survival of his self-styled revolution when voters elect a successor. Even his detractors had words of support.
I think the best future for Venezuela is one without Chavez. He leaves a legacy. I don't share his ideas, but he leaves positive things for the country.
Chavez died Tuesday after a 2-year battle with cancer. His body will be taken to a military academy to lie in state for 3 days.
And I just wanted to say that a flag-draped coffin carrying the body of Venezuelan Hugo Chavez floated over a sea of supporters Wednesday on its way to the military academy, where it will lie in state. Away from the procession route, jittery Venezuelans facing an uncertain future about their larger-than-life leader flock to supermarkets and gas stations to stock up on supplies, preparing for the worst a day after Chavez succumbed to cancer. Tens of thousands lined the streets or walked with a casket in the capital, many weeping as the body approached and led by a grim drum major. Other mourners pumped their fists and held aloft images of the late president amid countless waving yellow and blue and red Venezuelan flag. The fight goes on. Chavez lives, shouted the mourners in unison, many through eyes red from crying late into the night. Chavez's bereaved mother, Elena Friz de Chavez, leaned against her son's casket while a priest read a prayer before the procession left the military hospital where Chavez died at the age of 58. Vice President Nicolas Maduro, Chavez's anointed successor, walked with the crowd, along with cabinet members and uniformed soldiers. I feel so much pain, said Yamil Gil, a 38-year-old housewife, and she never wanted to see our president like this. We will always love him. And the former paratrooper will remain at the military academy until Friday's funeral, which promises to draw leaders from all over the world. Already the president of Argentina, Uruguay, Bolivia have arrived to mourn a man whose passing leaves an enormous void in the region's anti-American left. The Chavez-less era begins, declared a front page headline in Caracas, El Universal newspaper. But even in death, Chavez's orders were being heeded in a country covered with posters bearing his image and graffiti pledging, "We are all Chavez." Maduro will continue to run Venezuela as interim president and will stand as candidate of Chavez's Socialist Party in an election the country's constitution requires be called within 30 days. At a late-night tweet, Venezuelan state television said Defense Minister Admiral Diego Melero had pledged military support for Maduro's candidacy against likely opposition candidate Enrique Capriles, despite a constitutional mandate that the armed forces play a non-political role. For diehard Chavistas who camped out all night outside the military hospital, Wednesday was the first full day without a leader many described as a father figure, an icon in the mold of the early 19th century liberator Simon Bolivar, and others saw the death of a man who presided over Venezuela as a virtual one-man show, as an opportunity to turn back the clock on his socialist policies. For both sides, uncertainty ruled the day. It was not immediately clear when the presidential vote would be held or where or when Chavez would be buried following Friday's pageant-filled funeral. And Venezuela's constitution specifies that the Speaker of the National Assembly, currently Diosdado Camelo should assume the interim presidency if a president can't be sworn in. But critics say the officials left in charge by Chavez before he went to Cuba in December for his fourth cancer surgery have not been assiduous about heeding the Constitution. And human rights and free speech activists are concerned that they will flaunt the rule of law. And many took to Twitter to cite Article 233 of the Constitution, which they said establishes Cabello as the rightful interim president. Can you read a little more of that for me?
In just a few hours before announcing Chavez's death, Maduro virulently accused foreign and domestic enemies, clearly including the United States, of trying to undermine Venezuelan democracy. The government said two U.S. military attaches have been expelled for allegedly trying to destabilize the nation, and Maduro insisted that Chavez was purposely attacked with cancer. He said a scientific commission would be set up to investigate. There has been no word on any plans for an autopsy, while the government has said Chavez suffered from cancer. It never specified the exact location or type of cancer. Many mourners Wednesday took their cue from Maduro, venting anger at Washington and accusing
Venezuela's opposition of conspiring with far-right U.S. forces to undermine the revolution. The government of the United States is not going to rest, said Oscar Navas, a 33-year-old fruit vendor and Chavez supporter who joined the procession.
It's going to continue conspiring against our revolution because we are anti-imperialists. I don't have the slightest doubt the CIA is here, undercover, doing whatever it can to destabilize our country. Venezuela and the United States have a complicated relationship, with Chavez's enemy to the north remaining the top buyer of Venezuelan oil. But Chavez's inner circle has long claimed the United States was behind a failed 2002 attempt to overthrow him, and he has frequently used anti-American rhetoric to stir up support. Venezuela has been without a U.S. ambassador since July 2010 and expelled another U.S. military officer in 2006. U.S. State Department spokesman Patrick Ventrell denied Washington was trying to destabilize Venezuela and said the claim leads us to conclude that, unfortunately, the current Venezuelan government is not interested in improved relationships. Ventrell added that the suggestion that the United States had a hand in Chavez's illness was absurd. He hinted the U.S. could reciprocate with expulsions of Venezuelan diplomats. Capriles, the youthful governor of Miranda State, who lost to Chavez in the October presidential election, was conciliatory in a televised address Tuesday. He is widely expected to run against Maduro. This is not the moment to highlight what separates us, Capriles said. This is not the hour for differences. It is the hour for union. It's the hour for peace. Although the armed forces chief, General Wilmer Barrientos, reported complete calm in the country last Tuesday, several incidents of political violence flared after Chavez's death. A group of masked, helmeted men on motorcycles, some brandishing revolvers, reportedly attacked about 40 students on Tuesday who had been protesting for more than a week near the Supreme Court building to demand the government give more information about Chavez's health. The assailants, who didn't wear clothing identifying any political allegiance, burned the students' tents and scattered their food just minutes after Chavez's death was announced. They burned everything we had, said student leader Gabby Arello. She said she saw four of the attackers with pistols, but none fired a shot. Outside the military hospital, an angry crowd also roughed up a Colombian TV reporter. They beat us with helmets, with sticks, men and women, adults, Carmen Andrea Rangifo said on RCN TV. The video images showed her bleeding above the forehead, but she wasn't seriously injured. Maduro and other government officials have rallied against international media for allegedly reporting rumors about Chavez's health, although RCN wasn't one of those criticized. Chavez leaves behind a political movement in control of a nation that human rights activist Liliana Ortega, director of non-governmental group COFAC, describes as a badly deteriorated state where institutions such as the police, courts, and prosecutor's office have been converted into tools of political persecution and where most media are firmly controlled by the government. Javier Corrales, an Amherst College political scientist, said he was concerned about the virulent anti-American discourse under Maduro. It seems to me this is a government that is beginning to blame the United States for all its troubles. This is very dark, he said. This is the most nebulous period, the most menacing that the government has been, and the actions have been pretty severe.
So that's so much for that. And, you know, neither side trusts each other right now. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to
And I would guess there are good reasons on both sides.
Yeah, there is. And there was a couple other things that I had here that I wanted to mention. And I don't know if anybody follows the Colbert report on Colbert says, if you need more proof that the president is no friend of Israel, just do the math. Back in 2007, President Bush supported Israel with $2.3 billion in foreign military aid. This year, President Obama wants to bring that down to just $3.1 billion. I know it looks like it's going up, but remember, in Hebrew, you read charts from right to left. That's what Colbert said. So,
he's got a sense of humor anyway.
But it's like, one last thing here that as a quick little Cindy Sheehan sent this over.
That's a name out of the past.
Yeah, she's.
We had her on our show a number of times.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she's got a thing called Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox Radio Show, and you can hook into that. And right here, she's got a YouTube video that she sent out to everybody. Of her talking to a CNN reporter, I believe.
And this is really important.
Why do stand side by side by Hugo Chavez in Venezuela? Why do that? I mean, it sounds like that. Would you rather live under Hugo Chavez than George Bush?
Yes. You know, Hugo Chavez is not a dictator like you introduced him. He's been democratically elected 8 times, and he's not anti-American.
He's democratically elected.
Yeah. Hold on a second, though. He is not anti-American. He has helped the poor people of America. He has sent aid to New Orleans. He has sold heating oil to disadvantaged people in America, in the United States of America, at low cost. And the people of this country love him. And for us to say that we have some kind of influence over Venezuelan policy is wrong. The people of Venezuela have elected him overwhelmingly 8 times, and it's his country, and it's their country, and they should have the leader that they deserve.
I have to agree with that.
I do, too. And I do, too.
For some reason, we can't face the fact that we don't necessarily like democratically elected leaders.
I don't know when this was shot. There's ABC television interview with Hugo. This is a good way to possibly.
Barbara Walters' exclusive interview with Hugo Chavez, the controversial president of Venezuela. It's the first time any American journalist has interviewed him since he called President Bush the devil at the United Nations last fall. Remember that? Barbara is here this morning. She pulled no punches, asking him about his reputation here in the U.S. Here's a look.
You, Mr. President, do not have the best reputation in our country. You know that yourself. What's the biggest misconception about you?
I was speaking once with a lady in the United States, and she asked me, why are you an enemy of the United States? I said, why do you think that I am an enemy of the United States? I have read the papers. I have seen your picture with Saddam Hussein, with Fidel Castro, and with Muammar Gaddafi. I said, well, Fidel is my friend. Hussein, well, I went to Iraq and I met him as a matter of state. But maybe you have never seen my picture with John Paul II, the Pope. Two times I visited him. All my pictures with Clinton, both times we met. They only published the pictures to demonize Hugo Chavez.
As I talk with you, you are a very dignified man. But we have heard you call the President of the United States a devil, a donkey, a drunk, a liar, a coward, a murderer. What does all this name-calling accomplish?
Yes, I called him a devil in the United Nations. That's true. In another occasion, another time, I said that he was a donkey because I think that he is very ignorant about the things that are actually happening in Latin America and the world. If that is an excess on my part, I accept. And I might apologize. But who is causing more harm? Do I cause any harm by calling him a devil? He burns people, villages, and he invades nations.
Are there any circumstances under which you would invite President Bush to Venezuela?
No, never. I said in Buenos Aires that he was a political corpse. Fortunately, he will not remain in office for long.
I want to talk to you about Iran. As a close friend of President Ahmadinejad, do you support him when he says that the state of Israel should cease to exist? Do you agree?
No estoy de acuerdo.
No, I don't agree. I do not support any idea of overwhelming any country of the world. It is the government and the elite of the U.S. which is overwhelming all the countries in the world.
I want to ask some questions about your life. Would you like some coffee first? I understand you drink too much coffee.
But you didn't drink yours.
No, well,
yours must be
cold. You want mine?
Yes, you didn't drink yours. It must be cold. Yes,
we'll get...
give it to me. I will drink it.
Okay.
Yeah, I will drink it. I drink a lot of coffee beyond any advisable or any medical recommendation. But if I had to quit it, I would quit it, as well as I have quit so many intimate things. I left my home. I left my kids. I see them every now and then. I left what is most dearest to me. I had to abandon them. I do not regret anyway, because my life is devoted to the pool or the earth.
You are not married now. Are you? Do you want to marry, or are you married to the revolution?
It is very hard to be married. I have been married twice, but it is very hard. But I have a heart here, a beating heart in my chest. I've got blood running through my veins, you know.
También tengo sangre en las venas.
Barbara, fresh off the plane, he is a passionate man. That's very apparent.
Yes, but you know, when you meet him, when you see him in the navy blue suit and not the red shirt that he's in, he's passionate about his dislike for George Bush. He does like this country, and he's passionate about his feelings about America, and he feels that with a new president that we can be friends. He cares very much about poverty. He's a socialist. What he's trying to do for all of Latin America, you know, they've been trying to do it for years, is to eliminate poverty. But this is not the crazy man that we have heard.
I'm going to ask you that, because a lot of people in this country really don't know how to take him.
Well, because you hear him, you know, carrying on, he's a devil, he's a donkey, you know. And I think we have a tendency, when we don't understand someone, to automatically think they're crazy. This is a very intelligent man. Now, you don't have to believe in socialism. It hasn't worked yet. Who says that it will? But, you know, we say that about Fidel Castro, who is his political mentor, his political father, he calls.
Are there similarities, because you've spent time with both men? Are there similarities between the two?
Yes, I think there are. I mean, first of all, in terms of being socialist. Secondly, in terms of their personalities, they're larger than life. Chavez does a television show every night. By the way, he sings. He sang to me. I should have shown it to you, but it would have ruined the broadcast. And Castro phoned him last week on his television show. He seems very healthy. Chavez says that Castro is still ruling with his hand on one rein, and that Raul has his hand on the other. They're very close friends.
They are. The concern, though, about Chavez here in this country is the fear that he may cut off oil supply here. Is that a legitimate concern?
Look, he says that we're trying to assassinate him, that the CIA is trying to assassinate him, and he has said that we might invade. If we invaded, and he says that that's not going to happen, those would be the only circumstances, he says, in which he would cut off oil. But remember, Robin, that he has been selling cheap oil in this country through Sitka, which they own, in the Northeast when there are coal spells like now. He helped in Katrina. Now, this could be PR, but oil is oil. So far, no plans to cut it off, and that's good news.
Did he think he would do very well if he ran for office
here in
this country?
Yeah, he said, if I came to this country, I could run an election if I changed my name to Nikki Chavez, because I am for humanity, I am for disseminating the wealth, I am for helping people. Hmm. He says, I would win. So put his name down on the list.
So many others are running.
Yeah.
Barbara, thank you. Insightful, as always.
That was interesting.
Yeah. So with that, we end the night, and we wish Hugo good luck wherever he is. And,
he's crossed over.
Hey, rest in peace.
And I hope they don't destroy what he tried to do.
Yeah. Oh, there is something else I wanted to mention before we go. The World Simultaneous Prayer for Healing of Earth's Waters. I believe it's on Sunday, March 10th, 7 p.m., Banyan Tree. But hang on one second here. I'm just going to try to read the whole thing, just this announcement. Dr. Moto is currently in Hawaii and will offer a prayer for the healing Earth's waters at 1446 of March. I don't know what 1446 time is. March 11th. With people in Hawaii. The Moto Peace Project staff will be in Fukushima on March 11th, and we will offer the prayer at the same time with people in Fukushima. And we would love you to join us and pray from wherever you are to heal the waters on Earth together with us. And you can check this out at Masaru Emoto, Masaru Emoto, M-A-S-A-R-U, Emoto, you know, that's a prayer for the healing of the waters in Fukushima and the rest of the world. And with that blessing, we wish you a pleasant evening.
Yes, good night, folks, and talk to you next week.
Yeah. Good night, everyone. And good night.